Inside, it seemed dark and warm after the clear air upon the hill. The hall was long and wide and filled with shadows and half-lights. Mighty pillars upheld its lofty roof, but here and there bright sunbeams fell in glimmering shafts from the eastern windows high up, up under the deep eaves. Through the louver in the roof, above the thin wisps of issuing smoke, the sky showed pale and blue. As their eyes changed, the travelers perceived that the floor was paved with stones of many hues, branching runes and strange devices intertwined beneath their feet. They saw now that the pillars were richly carved, gleaming dully with gold and half-seen colors. Many woven cloths were hung upon the walls, and over their wide spaces marched figures of ancient legend. Some dim with years, some darkling in the shade.
Welcome to A Sacred Fellowship, where we are reading the works of J.R.R. Tolkien using sacred practices. We're using these texts to learn, to reflect on our lives, and to think about life's big questions. We believe that through treating classics like The Lord of the Rings as sacred, we will learn to treat one another as sacred.
And this is episode 51, where your hosts, Catherine Olson and Lorianne Schwenk, will be discussing the sixth chapter in The Treason at Isengard, The King of the Golden Hall, through the theme of vulnerability. Take a seat by the dais, not next to Grima, or in your car and join us. Reading in community is an essential part of what it means for us to treat a text as sacred, and we are glad you're here to continue building our fellowship. Good. Hello. I won't say what time of day it is. Hello, Catherine.
Well, as it is the anniversary of when Gandalf came to Bag End to meet Bilbo Baggins, I will say good morning. And I mean it.
Good morning. We mean it. Oh, wonderful.
Thanks to the Tolkien Society for reminding us of that day on its Twitter account.
That's so cool. That's a wonderful, wonderful accident. So this sets in motion his whole birthday planning, or? Oh, no, this sets in motion The Hobbit. Okay. Oh, right. I'm just so deep in Lord of the Rings, I forgot all about The Hobbit. Wonderful. Right, because he spends his birthday in a barrel.
Yeah.
Having a cold. Good.
Thank you very much for remembering.
There we are. Well, thank you for reminding us of that. Do you have a dungeon or a tower for us this week?
Well, my tower definitely has to be that on last Friday, I got to go to my cousin's daughter's wedding reception, and I'm so happy for Madeline and Caden for their new life together. But the real tower was that because we were all vaccinated and they have been social distancing and we're wearing masks, I got to hug a lot of cousins. And my dungeon is that I have been looking forward to getting some bike riding done, and today it is quite rainy out, which means that I will not be getting on my bike after I finish recording here. But tomorrow is another day.
Tomorrow is another day, alas.
How about
alas.
You?
We could use the rain.
Yes, exactly.
Dusty west. So for me, the dungeon is, I don't know if I've got something or whatever. I got a tick bite, and it was a Lyme tick, and I don't feel great, so I'm trying not to put those two things together, but I do see my doctor tomorrow, and I'm on top of this, and I've done some medication, so I'm just kind of confused as to why I feel so crummy and tired and low. So maybe, you know, it might even be allergies. It really could be allergies. So
I hope it's some kind of hay fever and not something more serious.
I am sneezing like a hobbit with a cold. So it could very well be all of that. My tower is similarly fully vaccinated. We had some people to our house on Saturday night. It was wonderful. So it was just sweet. It was really nice to share that and to hug and to be together with these folks. Texting and Zooming is all very good, but it was just really nice to be together. So that is my tower.
Well, if you'll allow me an indulgence, I do actually want to make one final tower for our community. As we've mentioned before, we have a good friend named Christine, and she recently took a certification exam that she has been working on, she says, since 2008 with continuous study and hard work. And she let us know very late last night that she passed, and we could not possibly be happier for her. So yay, congratulations Christine. To Christine.
Absolutely. Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad you brought that up. That is absolutely wonderful. So I think it is my turn to tell a story, and our theme is vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that actually came to me is from back when I was in college and I was in music school. And I think when I was a junior, a friend and I were leading a children's orchestra. And that was terrifying anyway, but what the heck, we did that. It was a little bit of income. And every week we just took it week by week and did it. And I think at the beginning of one class, I was leading the tuning and playing my A on my violin. And as you know, Catherine, but maybe not all our listeners do, you know, the strings are under great tension from the pegs at the top of the violin. They come down the fingerboard, they cross a bridge, literally called a bridge. And then they go, they're attached on the tailpiece, and the tailpiece itself is attached to the violin with a loop. And then that loop is held on, is a holds onto an end pin. And I've been gesturing with my hands, and I hope you all appreciate my gestures because none of you can see them. But I've just sketched out that whole physical, you know, properties of a violin. So while I was helping these youngsters tune their violins and playing my own, the loop on the tailpiece broke. The tailpiece flew up, the bridge went one way, the strings, it was just, my violin essentially fell apart. And it was enough that the little thing between the back and the belly of the violin even fell over. And that shouldn't happen. It was a nightmare, and I burst into tears in front of the children. I was vulnerable. And later, to my absolute horror, I got reprimanded. The dean of the college said, you should not do that. You should not ever show emotion like that in front of the children. And I have never been more certain that someone was wrong as I was at that moment and as I still am today. My vulnerability showed those kids it's okay to be scared and upset. It is okay. And that then you solve the problem and you move on. There are no cell phones. It was hard to figure out, but I got it figured out. And I have no shame and no regret for showing my vulnerability, for crying about my instrument, which I loved, absolutely loved my violin. And I cannot believe that this grown woman had the nerve to say that to me. And as I, I'm repeating, but I will say that this was vulnerability that I have no shame about. And I would encourage everyone to separate shame from vulnerability. Absolutely. It is a different thing. It is not a sign of weakness to be vulnerable. It is not a sign of weakness to say you don't know. It is not a sign of weakness to say you're scared. And it's definitely not a sign of weakness to cry. And I say that to everybody. So there we are.
And now you're bringing back a memory of my own in which I was in the same exact position, except as an 11-year-old I tripped and dropped my violin. And the same thing literally happened with what you were describing towards the end. And I likewise burst into tears. And it was because an adult told me that it was okay to be upset about this and express my emotion that I was able to deal with it healthily. So yes. I am glad that you understand the wisdom of this.
Yes, yes. And what I would like to understand more is all the little chirps and murmurs you've been saying for the past week about how much you love this chapter. And I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about that before we get to the theme in the chapter and all the words that the gammers have to talk about.
Absolutely. I have said it before, both on this podcast and in our Facebook group, that this is my favorite chapter of pretty much everything.
Oh.
And I'm going to tell a short story, much shorter than I usually tell, about why, with a quote. So every 6 months in my church, we have what's called General Conference, and all of the leaders of the church speak to us on various themes. And President Dieter F. Uchtdorf is one of our leaders, and he gave a talk several years ago about the firebombing of Dresden during World War II, which was where his family had been living before they fled as refugees. And he talked about coming back to it literally 70 years later after he had seen it destroyed in the bombings from the Allied forces, and how he had reflected on the reconstruction of it. And he said, "Surely I thought if man can take the ruins, rubble, and remains of a broken city and rebuild an awe-inspiring structure that rises towards the heavens, how much more capable is our Almighty Father to restore his children who have fallen, struggled, or become lost?" And there is so much despair and desperation in this entire chapter, with the grief of King Theoden and his vulnerability and the ill counsel being given to him. And then it is all overcome by the best possible counsels and the people who are still loyal, and his own strength and his own resolution. And it's just so fantastic that I can't help but tying those two things together, this idea that it can be rebuilt through powers beyond our own. And so that's why I'm so in love with this chapter.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And so, last thing before we get into the themes, the gammers, you know, last week we only had one word. Well, this week they're making up for it. And as a matter of fact, they found another one this morning, and I finally had to tell them, you know what, you know, we can't get them all of the time. I actually really struggled a bit with the word mark and Lord of the Mark. And I find that meaning boundary, and then is actually even related to forest, as in Merk wood, Merk, M-O with an umlaut, R-K. It means forest, Old English, Norse, German, the usual suspects there. So it sounds like the Lord of the Mark is the Lord of this boundary, or the things enclosed within. What would you?
The latter is what I make.
Okay.
And I don't know if you have this in there, but it's tied to the word marquess or the marquis, and how right. That is a person ruling over that mark.
Correct. Right. And okay, I won't do the Jane Austen quote. We hear heedless, and I thought that was an interesting way to talk about their coming, because the guards say that they are heedless, the three plus Gandalf, when actually they've been watching them for a long time. So it is kind of an interesting thing. And of course, it means without regard. So I was looking up heed, and that would mean observe, take care, or protect. So I think that's an interesting thing. So perhaps they were saying, heedless you come, you know, without protection, perhaps. They might be meaning. And heed and hat are related. So a hat is protection for the head, and related to heed being protection, observation, taking care. So it's not just watching, but watching over in a protective way. We get that wonderful English word sooth, which is marvelous. And it's a Superman word, truth, justice, righteousness. So I love that. Bosses, when they're getting their equipment before they eat and before they ride off, the word bossing. And so I was thinking about emboss, which is something kind of raised and decorative. So a boss is a protuberance or a button. In the 1300s in France, B-O-C-E means hump or swelling or tumor. It is actually an uncertain origin before that. And emboss means to ornament with raised work. So I loved that. And so I think it's cool that a compliment or a saying something's great, you sometimes can say, oh, that's so boss. And I think it's meant in terms of like being a boss and being in charge, but it could also have that meaning. And corslet is a very French word. C-O-R-S, cors, means body. And the Latin would have been plate armor for the body. So they, when Aragorn and Gimli and Legolas arm up, they get corslets and bosses and all of this. And we also, I wanted to look at the word vulnerability since we chose it, and it goes all the way back from the Latin vulnerabilis, vulnerare, to wound, wounding, hurt, injure, maim. And I find it fascinating. It is related to Valhalla.
Oh.
So where a soldier who has died goes to Valhalla. So when made vulnerable, you go to Valhalla. I got some chills when I thought about that. And then the Gammers, of course, are so meticulous about the different editions of the book. And we know that there will always be mistakes found, and there will always be something new to add and questions that we can't answer. We no longer have Christopher to help us. We no longer have the professor. And so, you know, is house always supposed to be capitalized when it's referring to a dynasty? Is, you know, all these different questions. But one of my favorites is that I happen to have the 1994 version where there is the word forward and it is meant to be froward. And I am tickled pink because I love books as artifacts in their own right, not just for what's inside them. And there's to and fro, and there's toward, and there's froward. And froward is from at least the 12th century, turned against, perverse, disobedient, peevish, petulant, and it is obviously the opposite of toward. So, and ward is from the French garder. So again, to guard something. So it is, or to protect, like he is my ward or something like that. So it is very interesting to see to and fro having that ending there, toward and froward. So future editions all have that, but that 1994 one, that mistake slipped through. And that's the one I have until later this year. So that's what I'm reading for now. So, shall we talk about the theme in the chapter?
Oh, please do.
There's a few instances of vulnerability here.
I have 21, if I'm 20. Not mistaken.
I don't count. So I think that's wonderful that you do. I think just from the very beginning, they're utter exhaustion.
Absolutely.
The three start off right away. And then they stop for a little bit, and Gandalf only lets them rest for a while. And it doesn't even sound like Aragorn sleeps. He just lies down on his back. He just stretches out. And I just feel for them that exhaustion carries with it some vulnerability there. Aragorn was stiff and weary, but they only get a few hours rest. Gandalf leaning on his staff, so he doesn't lie down. Gandalf 2.0 is still perky. That's where I started off with, right in the beginning of the sentence.
Yep, that is the exact same place where I found it first as well. So my second one is Edoras, those cords are called, referring to the golden hall that we're talking about, and the formal name of the hall is actually Meduseld. But there dwells Theoden, son of Thangol, king of the Murk of Rohan. We are come with the rising of the day. Now the road lies plain to see before us, but we must ride warily, for war is abroad, and the Rohirrim, the horse lords, do not sleep, even if it seems so from afar. Draw no weapons, speak no haughty word. I counsel you all until we are come before Theoden's seat.
Yes.
And I find it remarkable that he points out that we are come with the rising of the day. So this is a promise of renewal, or the idea of that biblical phrase that joy comes in the morning. And he's saying that you know, these people are still suspended in this long dark night. They are people who do not sleep, even if it seems so from afar. And so I think that he has an understanding of, yes, you all, you three are exhausted. Think what they are still experiencing.
Tell them what they are experiencing, or tell us, or tell me. What are they experiencing? What is the context for the Rohirrim?
Well, for one thing, they have recently lost the crown prince of their kingdom. As we know from one of the references in it, Théoden suffered the loss of his son 5 days ago at the first battle of the Isen, where he was ambushed by orcs. Mm-hmm. And so there is a great sense of uncertainty as to what exactly will be happening. Also, those orcs seem to be from a person that they previously considered an ally, and even the Grima Wormtongue, we will see, is counseling them to maintain that alliance. But well, also, so
they've already been worried about what's to the east.
Yes.
So now they are aware of this vulnerability to the west.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but I think the best thing, this is possibly a little bit political, but I always say that one of the most significant things in this chapter is a sign of their ill at ease, is that they have decided that no person who is from beyond their borders and no person who does not speak their language is to be trusted. And I always think of that as a sure sign of a society that is heading down an incorrect path.
And a vulnerable society.
Yes.
And choosing the wrong solution to that vulnerability, I would say. Mm-hmm. Yes, I may have more to say on that when we get to it. I just, a little bit before that, they talk about at the mouth of the Vale, there stood like a sentinel, a lonely height. About its feet there flowed as a thread of silver, the stream that issued. So there's even a vulnerability in the landscape, that lonely mm-hmm. height. There's a gap, and travelers can go through a gap, and invaders can come through a gap. So there is some vulnerability to the landscape itself. And then after what you had mentioned there, the until we are come before Théoden's seat, because I love that until a lot. Mm-hmm. don't draw any weapons or speak any haughty words. I love that. Until the flowers strike as vulnerable. It is a, you know, they are, here are these barrows, correct? There are these mounds and mm-hmm. these beautiful flowers. They look vulnerable at any rate. They're tiny and glistening, but it looks like the grass is even white, or it looks like there's snow, and even snow is vulnerable. Mm-hmm. It molts and melts. So I just love that image so much of the grass as white as with the drifted snow.
I do love the symbol meme.
Yes. And where, oh, and I just have to mention, because then Aragorn starts to sing something in this Rohirrim language, this language of the
Rohirric.
Rohirric. And the rhyme is interesting when he translated it, because we got blowing, flowing, glowing, mm-hmm. growing, and then meadow, shadow, burning, returning. An interesting pattern to that. And it is sad. And even in the common tongue, you can hear that sadness and strong music to it. I really like that poem.
Well, I feel like there's great vulnerability in that poem itself. Mm-hmm. And there's, I will give you a little bit of a spoiler, that in the movie, this is actually what Théoden says when he's preparing for the battle that is to come in the next chapter. No, hopefully that's not a big surprise to anyone who's reading along with us. Mm-hmm. But he says it in this moment of desperation. I feel like Aragorn recites it in recognition of how imperiled they are at this point. Right. And so it's just this reflection on how they are no longer able to rely upon the strength that they have known for so many centuries and so many lives of men.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it gives us a little foreknowledge, because we know now that Aragorn knows this language. Mm-hmm. And so when they are greeted, "Stay, strangers here unknown," they cried in the tongue of the Rittermark. Okay, that's another way to call the language.
Yes.
And so Gandalf understands the speech, and we know that Aragorn does as well, though he does not speak yet. This is just so far Gandalf speaking to this guard here. And there's your passage there. None should enter his gate save those who know our tongue and are our friends. How can you know that? How can you? You're right. It is a dangerous policy.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we know that Mr. Tolkien does not like allegory.
So. Well, it even reminds me a little bit of during the Second World War, going back to that conflict, but in a different perspective, when the Russians in St. Petersburg were worried that the Germans were about to attack, they actually stopped allowing the tram conductors to make the announcements in any language, so that people who were ill at ease or who did not know where they were automatically suspected to be with the enemy. And so they would have those kinds of safeguards. And it really reminds me of that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So there's that kind of vulnerability where somebody then goes kind of on the offense as a kind of an act of prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're talking about, say, are you not a wizard, some spy from Saruman? So that was kind of my first hint that they knew already. This is before we know about this battle 5 days before, or know for sure about that. So they already do not trust Saruman.
Mm-hmm.
They're right that he's a wizard.
Yes, and he is on the White Council, which is headed by Saruman. So in other circumstances, he might have been what they suspect him to be.
Right. And Gandalf appears vulnerable. Old and weary you seem now, but you are fell and grim beneath, I deem.
Mm-hmm.
So it is an interesting contrast of appearance of vulnerability with strength beneath, and the guard is not fooled. Where was your next place of vulnerability?
Let me see. This is after they have come to the doors of Medusald. And Aragorn stood a while hesitating after they have been asked to disarm. It is not my will, he said, to put aside my sword or to deliver Anduril to the hand of any other man. It is the will of Theoden, said Hama. It is not clear to me that the will of Theoden, son of Thangel, even though he be Lord of the Mark, should prevail over the will of Aragorn, son of Arathorn, Elendil's heir of Gondor. This is the house of Theoden, not of Aragorn, even were he the king of Gondor in the seat of Denethor, said Hama, stepping swiftly before the doors and barring the way. His sword was now in his hand and the point towards the strangers.
Mm-hmm.
This is idle talk, said Gandalf. Needless is Theoden's demand, but it is useless to refuse. A king will have his way in his own hall, be it folly or wisdom. There's this breakdown of, we know that in the documents, we know that Gondor and Rohan used to be part of the same kingdom. So Gondor and Rohan are fast allies, and they have these old allegiances and these old respects for each other's cultures, and we will definitely see these in chapters to come. But this breakdown seems to be something that is impassable with this idea of king versus king. But I like that Gandalf is saying, you know, we have to respect the fact that a king will have his way in his own hall, be it folly or wisdom.
I do appreciate that Aragorn pulls rank a little bit there. I love that sentence. And I think that's his own vulnerability. And he is admitting this. It is very civil. It is not my will.
Mm-hmm.
It's not clear to me that the will of Theoden, son of Thangel, even though he be Lord of the Mark, should prevail over my will. And so we see this ever increasing sense of kingship in him. And here it shows up in a place of vulnerability. I like just before that, the vulnerability of the guards, because they turn the hilts of their swords towards the travelers in a token of peace. Mm-hmm. And there's that strength in vulnerability. we're even offering you the weapons. We're not pointing them at you. And so after this little conversation, the swords are pointed the other way.
Yes.
I thought that was a very interesting visual. And I love how for Aragorn, it's the difference between this sword and any other. I would hand over my sword if I bore any sword but Anduril. So,
One of my earliest explorations of the Lord of the Rings on a deeper level was I went to a symposium and they had a paper there on the difference of kingly relations between the books and the movies. And they say in the version that Tolkien intended, namely the books, there's this idea that Aragorn is meant to be the king of Gondor. And that this is a king among kings, that he has to have respect and he has to have relations and he has to have allegiances. And in the movie, it's more implied that he is meant to be the king over all the kings. And so I like that this is the kind of the distinction in this paragraph.
Yes.
And I personally see him more as a king among kings than anything else.
Right. I do too. That's what I'm picking up from the book as well. And I love how Gandalf then diffuses the situation. We are all friends here, or should be, for the laughter of Mordor will be our only reward if we quarrel. So he's reminding them of their true vulnerability, which matters more than this little battle over setting things down. And I love how Legolas immediately hands over his bow. He just right off does. So he's fine with that. And then Anduril, and then Gimli's sword. So it diffuses and works well. And then it looks as though Hama suddenly sees them and believes him finally. And the guard stepped back and looked with amazement on Aragorn. It seems that you are come on the wings of song out of the forgotten days. And it's so interesting that he didn't believe him before until he takes off the sword and sets it down. That's an interesting moment. It really is.
Well, I love the choice of words with the forgotten days, whereas it seems as if his acquiescence and his humility is something that they see in the days of Errol the Young, whereas now is the horse and rider. So that they are looking back to these more civilized times and longing for a bit of that, but if seeing it with amazement.
And seeing it, well, it might be coming to its future. So they finally go in. They agree that Gandalf can keep his staff, which is very nice. And I thought there was some vulnerability in the hall. Just that part I read at the opening. It's dark and warm, as opposed to the clear air outside. So it almost reminds me of the descriptions in the Fangorn Forest of the stuffiness. But here, you know, so dark and warm, it's going to make you a little sleepier. It's dark. You're not going to see as clearly, but what you do see are kind of this shafts of light coming through. So you can't quite see clearly. I'm really imagining it set up to make someone vulnerable who is coming in, or to keep someone vulnerable who is in there. And I thought it really interesting, just a little farther along past the clear wood fire burning. So it's not smoking. And so I'm thinking it is extremely hot in there. This is dry fuel. This wood is dry and there is just no smoke. It is a hot, hot fire. I know that when I have a fire in my fireplace, at first it's really, really dark orange and all that. And then when it really gets hot, it is yellow to white. And so I think that is not a mistake, this description. And the hall is really the same as Beorn's, this long rectangle, the fire in the middle. So that's an interesting architectural similarity there.
You're very right on that. I was also recalling that in Beowulf, the Anglo-Saxon epic that many people know and which Tolkien actually translated at one point, there is Hrothgar's mead hall, which is called Heorot, and it is a place of gift and a place of people coming together for counsel and for crafting. And so there's this in setting it in this place with such wording, it really invokes an idea that there should be a sense of hospitality there, mm-hmm. which Gandalf, of course, invokes later, but it definitely is meant to, in my opinion, set the stage that we are very strongly thrust off of once we actually meet Theoden.
Mm-hmm. And talk about vulnerability. A man so bent with age that he seemed almost a dwarf. White hair, long and thick. He's got invisible chains, it almost seems like, and he mm-hmm. is pinned down there. It is very interesting. And then it isn't really terribly discussed, though there's a few sentences to it, but it seems as though Eowyn is also imprisoned in this situation. And, you know, we hear a little bit about this, but we don't entirely know what she has suffered, but you get the sense that she is not free. So I love her arc in this chapter. Sorry. Okay.
Well, I feel like definitely I agree with her being slightly imprisoned in this situation. And it, for me, it's a sense of she is loyal to a fault to her king, and the people who are holding Theoden under their thrall and by various means are using that to their advantage. Mm-hmm. And so it's another corruption of what should be a pure and honorable thing.
And I think also that she's not going to abandon him totally to the control of these others. Mm-hmm. So she is going to stay very close. So I appreciate that in her. She has a good head there. What was the next place for you?
Oh, for me, it is a little bit later, but between when we meet Theoden and when we meet Eowyn. Mm-hmm. So, I have to make sure I'm identifying the correct speaker. It is right. Theoden.
Yeah, I have to put it in the margins of TH or G or whatever. Yeah.
I greet you, he said, and maybe you look for welcome. But truth to tell, your welcome is doubtful here, Master Gandalf. You have ever been a herald of woe. Troubles follow you like crows, and ever the oftener the worse. I will not deceive you. When I heard that Shadowfax had come back riderless, I have rejoiced at the return of the horse, but still more at the lack of the rider. And when Éomer brought the tidings that you had gone at last to your long home, I did not mourn, but news from afar is seldom sooth. Here you come again, and with you comes evil worse than before, as might be expected. Why should I welcome you, Gandalf Stormcrow? Tell me that.
I love that name for him.
Oh, it's so fantastic. And it is true, but I mean, it's something that you should respect.
Right. And it's wonderful how Gandalf is able to shift his perspective. But I love that there it is. But news from afar is seldom sooth. And so we see that as truth, just righteous, mm-hmm. righteous. So,
and again, that xenophobia.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That kind of false vulnerability that puts you on the offensive instead of opens you up. Mm-hmm. So we get another name for Gandalf, Lethspell, ill news. Mm-hmm. I like that. Ill news is an ill guest, they say. So this is when we hear finally from Wormtongue. He's
such a monstrosity.
He is truly a monstrosity.
If you're not in our fellowship on the Facebook page, you should really go there to look at some of the artwork that we've assembled for this chapter.
Yes.
But if you are not, there is an artist whose last name is Colangeli, and I believe it's Lorenzo Colangeli, who has done fantastic artwork for this scene with Grima just leering and lurking, and his influence over Theoden is so obvious mm-hmm. in the depiction of it.
Right. And I love Gandalf's just wry underplaying of everything. The courtesy of your hall is somewhat lessened of late. After all this complaints and litany and accusations from Grima, it's pretty incredible. Mm-hmm. And Grima even then disparages Lothlorien
Which you know is fighting words.
Yeah. I've got it. And then what I love is this next poem begins and the reader doesn't know who's singing right off. Mm-hmm. Dwemerdine and Lorianne seldom have walked the feet of men. Few mortal eyes have seen the light that lies there ever long and bright. Galadriel, Galadriel. And so this is Gandalf softly singing. And it is before he then undergoes a transformation. What a scene.
Yes.
Oh, does he bring the thunderstorm? Or is this just that he's in tune with nature?
I feel like it's a little bit of both. It reminds me of him looming in Bag End when he chastises Bilbo for not trusting him. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of invoking the same absolute righteousness, but expecting there to be a moment of pause brought on by this.
Well, and he's clearly showing himself more to his true form, whatever that might be. That mm-hmm. he is not just cloaked as wizard, but now revealed as a Maiar.
So yes.
I love that. I love that. And I'm just curious, I was trying to read, where does the healing happen? Or is it in stages? Because slowly Théoden left his chair, the light grows in the hall again. So it seems like it is slightly gradual. It's not like, boom, he's healed. But this slow opening, revealing himself, he is revealed as well from this shell of lies and deception. It's fantastic, and I really hope the movie does this right because I haven't seen it yet.
Oh man! Okay, I'm not going to give away how much I love the movie, but you know how much I love the movie.
You love this, okay? Okay, good.
And
good.
Bernard Hill does a fantastic job as Théoden. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. How many chapters are we from me getting to see this movie? Oh my goodness.
Okay. Only half a book.
Only the other half of the book. Okay. So
I may have to send you a YouTube link just so you can see this.
We can post it in the Facebook. We can all enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So I see that he's actually By showing his true self, he's actually showing his actual vulnerability. So he's no longer hiding under this mask. And when he's vulnerable, then he can be king and warrior. So I love this scene so much.
Well, something that really strikes me is you were asking, does this transformation happen in stages? Yeah. And one of the things that is actually left out of the movie, but I think is significant in this entire thing, and of course everything in Tolkien is significant mm-hmm. at one point or another, but the part of, do you ask for help? He lifted his staff and pointed to the high window. And so Gandalf in this scene is really working as an almost divine figure, an almost angelic form, someone who comes with messages and who comes with strengthening. But he first... It reminds me of kind of the repentance cycle that I was told to kind of teach as a missionary, where you first have to confess the problem and then you have to forsake it before you're able to move on to the reconciliation and to the redemption and to the healing on yourself and that of the part of the people you have.
CSJRR, we were yes. talking about. Anyway, yes. Okay.
Anyway, but he's saying, do you ask for help? And so the first step is to get Théoden to be in a vulnerable place in order to find his strength again.
Oh, I love it. I will point out, and I sometimes try to avoid these things, but it is one of my favorite things in the gospel. Jesus never just heals somebody unless they ask for it. And he often asks them what kind of healing, he never assumes. Mm-hmm. And I think my favorite is, someone says, if you want to, you can cure me. And Jesus says, of course I want to. Mm-hmm. And so that just really jumped out for me. Do you ask for help? So he's not going to give it unless, but he's going to give him a glimpse, isn't he?
Oh man, now you bring it back to the New Testament, and it then reminds me of another moment in which he healed, where a father came to Jesus with his child and said, "No," Jesus says, "all things are possible to them who believe." And he says, "Lord, I believe." But after a
Right.
moment, he then says, "Help thou
Help
my
my
unbelief."
unbelief.
And so I feel like this moment of "Do you ask for help?" is really a moment of "Help thou my unbelief" for Théoden and
Yeah,
Gandalf.
right. Ooh,
Okay, we
I'm a
can move away
goosebump.
from Jesus
Okay,
stories.
I know, I know. Anyway. Okay.
I blame you. You started
I started it this
it.
time, but yes. All right. And now we get some of my favorite things in the chapter. When I first read this back, oh, over 6 months ago now, 8 months ago, I was really struck by the tone. This is really the first time that the author steps into the mind of a female character. And we have, like you reminded me, we have some lines from Lobelia, but she's set up as a joke and is just, and we really don't actually know her thinking. We are told about her, we are not inside of her, but we really step inside of Eowyn here. And she admits, she experiences or reveals some vulnerability when she sees Aragorn for the first time. And she is not hiding that she is struck by him right off. So she is not afraid of her vulnerability as well. And there is no cost that she is not willing to pay to show that at this moment, this person she has just seen has really struck her. So the writing is, I don't even know how to describe it. I've never read anything. As she passed the doors, she turned and looked back. Grave and thoughtful was her glance as she looked on the king with cool pity in her eyes. Very fair was her face and her long hair. It's just beautiful. Thus Aragorn, for the first time in the full light of day, beheld Eowyn, Lady of Rohan. It's just beautiful writing. And she does several other things, stepping forth from those feelings. They hatch fully formed inside of her. So, and I, well, not to confuse movies and book, but I was at an Oscars party last night, and it somewhere or other, all of the women at the party, the three of us, got talking about Viggo Mortensen, and anyway, we all felt the
I was trying not to bring up how I feel about Viggo Mortensen,
same.
but yeah, he is an admirable
Right.
Aragorn.
So, if Aragorn wakens things in her, I get it.
Sympathize.
I get it. I sympathize. I empathize. I walk with her in that journey. So, where did you find vulnerability next?
The very next sentence. "Now, Lord," said Gandalf, "look upon
Yes.
out upon your land. Breathe the free air again." From the porch upon the top of the high terrace, they could see beyond the stream the green fields of Rohan fading into distant gray. Curtains of windblown rain were slanting down. The sky above into the west was still dark with thunder, and lightning far away flickered among the tops of the hidden hills. But the wind had shifted to the north, and already the storm that had come out of the east was receding, rolling away southward to the sea. And this again reminds me of what you were asking about. Does Gandalf bring the storm? And did one of the signs that Théoden is recovering is that he looks upon this storm and he's able to see that it is receding. So his idea of the storm crow being an ill guest and the last spell being something dangerous is already being driven from his mind.
And then he says, "It is not so dark here." And I love that, how it seems like even his eyes are opening, or something covering his eyes is lifting.
And
And I
it's
love,
after that that he no longer needs his staff to
yes,
be supported.
cast aside your prop. Love it. So he's trusting Gandalf enough to be vulnerable. Can I stand without this? And he trusts him, and he does. And it is
It's so
terrific.
beautiful.
It is so beautiful. And so then we find out that Éomer has been punished for having gone riding and not, you know, I don't know if he should have imprisoned the three when he found them, but whatever, thanks to Grima, Eomer has been imprisoned. So that is getting undone. Lines of care were smoothed away and did not return. I love it. And then, Eomer's return then. There was my next vulnerability. He does not know if his king is going to punish him, turn him out of his service, but he offers him his body and his sword, ever at your service. And no helm was on his head, no mail was on his breast. He is completely vulnerable. He completely trusts his king. The king could take his own sword from him and kill him with it if that's what's going to happen. Eomer is fully vulnerable to his king. Mm-hmm. And again, I love this, where men can be like that. A book that shows men able to show that kind of vulnerability and openness. Love it. Slowly, Theoden stretched forth his hand. As his fingers took the hilt, it seemed to the watchers that firmness and strength returned to his thin arm. I love it. Love it, love it, love it. Anyway.
Okay, I need to like break out of my, I love manly men and all their forms, because that's like right. My brain right now.
Right, right. And manly men.
But it's not just people who have muscles. It's right. Men who are not afraid to be strong after they have found themselves in vulnerability, and strong while they are still yes. recovering from that vulnerability.
And have it's just so vocabulary. And
yeah.
Yes, yes. Love it, love it, love it.
Well, I love that the ending of his cry after he says, "Arise now, arise, riders of Theoden, dire deeds awake, dark as eastward, let horse be bridled, horn be sounded, forth arrowing us." And that word arrowing us, deriving from the Old English word for nobility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So these people who are descended from noblemen.
Yes, and their founder, their Aerol, right?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful. I love that. Okay, so then Theoden becomes a good host and he wants to offer sleep, food and sleep. Guest house will be made ready there. You shall sleep. And I love what Aragorn says. There is no rest yet for the weary.
Yes.
And they know that they are going to take off very soon. And he is up for it. But oh my goodness, he's admitting that he's weary. So even just saying it out loud, I hadn't realized that was in a way a place of vulnerability. He's admitting to vulnerability and weariness, but there will be no rest yet. So now Théoden receives back his own blade and a few other things. And there we have Grima finally vulnerable. And that's where he really goes on the offensive. And it is it is not really vulnerability there. It is that kind of shame and cowardice that makes him go on the offensive. It makes him just lose it. And the insulting and everything. Oh, he is. Oh, and he's just trying, groveling, he's insulting, he's terrible. He's just terrible.
Yeah, he's so reprehensible.
And this
I'm trying to find where that passage is specifically.
Right, well, it's all of it. I love how he's trying to work it. I'll stay behind and protect the hall. Right, right, right. Oh, no, King, you shouldn't go. You send others. You shouldn't go. I mean, he's really trying to regain his control.
Oh. Well, there's this kind of lovely interaction between Théoden and Grima, because Théoden knows that he has cause for shame, namely that he has, there's that old saying that I had been told, that guilt is a feeling that you have done something wrong, and shame is that feeling that you are a bad person for what you have done. And I feel like Grima has earned a place in the people who should feel shame. Mm-hmm. But Théoden is seeing it as, you have cause for guilt. Let me give you a chance to redeem it. Let me give you a chance to serve. And it is right. Grima who absolutely refuses this redemption of any kind.
Right, right.
And I hate him so much.
I hate him. And Gandalf just blasts him down, snake in a terrible voice, down on your belly. How long is it since Saruman bought you? What was the promised price? You were to pick your share of the treasure and take the woman you desire. So there it is, that he's been playing for not just the power, but also for Eowyn. And I just hate the commodification of women. I hate using women as bartering tools or as human shields. And it is disgusting. And we don't know really how long he's been there. We don't know. And we don't really know how long Saruman has been treasonous. So it is, how long has she just endured this with no ally, nobody, perhaps her brother, but he probably mm-hmm. was equally powerless. So just awful. So there's her vulnerability as well, haunting her steps, watching her under your eyelids. I mm-hmm. just, I loathe that. But then he leaves. Exit, yep. Pursued by a bear. Not, but
we wish. We wish that Beorn would come pursuing him.
Oh, we do. That would be great. Yes. Where else did you find vulnerability?
Let me skip ahead so I don't accidentally read my Havruta passage.
Right, exactly. There's Frog. There it is.
For me, it is three pages from the end where Théoden is kind of proclaiming his understanding of the doom that is falling upon Rohan. And this is not necessarily doom as in evil actions or ill mm-hmm. outcomes, but the fate that is likely to be his once he rides from this place. And so he says, "Behold, I go forth, and it seems to be my last riding," mm-hmm. just as the Ents have had their last march. Said Théoden, "I have no child. Théodred, my son, is slain. I name Éomer, my sister's son, to be my heir. If neither of us return, then choose a new lord as you will. Mm-hmm. But to someone I must now entrust mm-hmm. my people that I leave behind to rule in my place. Which of you will stay?" No man spoke.
No man spoke.
Oh, and people who have read ahead will understand why emphasize no man. But exactly. Anyway, she is no man.
And I love Hama. We trust yes. in the House of Aerol, and we're not talking about Amor.
Yep.
I love him. I love Hama. He is not the last.
I said Aemer. Not Amor, answered Hama, and he is not the last. There is Eowyn's daughter of Eomund, his sister. She is fearless and high-hearted, and all of her, let her be as lord to the Aerolingus while we are gone. "Shall these show," said Théoden, "let the heralds announce to the folk that Lady Eowyn will lead them."
So notice that he doesn't object. He doesn't say, "What, her?" He doesn't say, "Girls can't do that." It's immediately announce it. It is so. It is done. And so I really like that. I really appreciate that. I think that's marvelous.
Sorry, this is not a Havruta question, but this is a genuine curiosity. How really cognizant do you think Théoden was of Eowyn and those trying to help him during his time of being stricken down by grief and also by this ill counsel?
My guess would be that he was so deceived that if Eowyn said, "Here's some red wine," he would think this is poison. If Eowyn or Eomer said the sky is blue, he would have said the sky is black. He would have thought that they said the sky is black. My guess is somehow there was even some level of, I don't know if there'd be magic or power from Saruman through Grima, where he could not really perceive their good intentions.
It's actually, I completely agree with you that that's a possibility. There's this almost, I don't know when the debate started, but it's certainly probably with the first readers of this book about whether or not there was actual magic involved in Théoden's, not exactly demise, but his vulnerability, or if it was entirely because he was preyed upon during this time of great grief. And so I'm never entirely sure which one I've come down on this side of, because it kind of changes with every reading.
Well, if it's only happened in the last 5 days, I find that hard to buy.
Yeah.
I really do. And so...
Which one?
If his downfall or his delusion or deception is all just in the past 5 days since his son's death, I don't buy that, because he had an heir 6 days ago. Mm-hmm. And yet it seems that Grima has been so entrenched. In fact, you know, when they find Théoden's sword, they said it was in his trunk, and there are many other things in there that have been missing. Mm-hmm. So I think he's been there for a long time working his deception. And Saruman's a wizard and perhaps empowered Grima in some way to have a little more than just human levels of power. But that's where I am today on that.
I'm thinking there are many, many speculative fanfics I could write on how exactly this went about.
Well, see, that's, you know, I wonder, you know, and again, I haven't read all that whole History of Middle Earth thing, and you wonder, is there more that Tolkien has? So one of these days I'll be reading more, I'm sure. So anything else in this chapter for you? I had an instance of not vulnerability.
Do tell.
Aragorn looked back as they passed towards the gate. Alone, Eowyn stood before the doors of the house at the stair's head. Sounds vulnerable. The sword was set upright before her, and her hands were laid upon the hilt. She was clad now in mail and shone like the silver, like silver in the sun. I just see strength.
Yes.
I just see mighty power there. She is not vulnerable. She is not afraid. Even she does not object to this assignment. She is ready. So,
Whereas I found in the last sentences of the chapter, far over the plain, Eowyn saw the glitter of their spears as she stood still, alone before the doors of the silent house. Mm. And I almost see that as a vulnerability in the sense that she is going to have to be her own strength. She is going to have to be the one calling people to action, calling people to arms, giving her own counsel, because she is in these doors of the silent houses.
This is the vulnerability that does not mean weakness. This is the vulnerability of strength, I think. Yes, that is beautiful. And there's just, I just have to ask, it says the last host of Rohan rode thundering into the west. Why does it say the last host?
I think it's not, this is the last that we're ever going to see. It's every single host of Rohan that they're going be able to summon in this moment.
Thank you. Thank you. And then a little earlier, there is a line I didn't quite understand. Whether I came in time or not is yet to be seen, said Gandalf. But as for your gift, Lord, I will choose one that will fit my needs. Swift and sure, give me Shadowfax. He was only lent before, if loan we may call it. But now I shall ride him into great hazard, setting silver against black. What is silver against black? Just the silver of his coat against black as in...
The Black Riders. Well, we have the, we haven't been introduced properly to the beasts that the Nazgul are going to be riding, since they've been deprived of their horses. But we know that there are riders in black on black mounts.
Right. Now with wings.
Yes.
We know that Legolas disabled one, but they can get more. Right. Okay. Thank you. I wasn't quite sure there. Anything else we need to say about the interchanges between Eowyn and Aragorn?
I do not feel a need for it just yet, so we can leave it at that if you have nothing more as well.
I have nothing more that I need to add. I'm certainly open to discussing it more with anybody on the Facebook page, or if you want to write a note to the Shire and talk about that. We would love to hear that. So that is a sacredfellowship@gmail.com.
And we actually got email at that email address for the first time this last week, since most people contact us on IM or on Facebook.
Right, right. So
it was slightly a startling thing to find it in my inbox.
I had stopped for a while because there was all the spam. So I just kind of gave up. So at any rate, but yes, the discussion can continue. What did we miss? All of that. So please send us your notes, your thoughts. We would love to have them. You can send us as a voicemail. We can maybe learn the technology to share your voice itself, but otherwise mm-hmm. we will read your note and we would love that. So now we are going to do, for the last time for a while, our practice of Havruta. So Catherine, you have a passage to share with us and then a question.
Okay, so I'm starting with Theoden questioning Gandalf concerning Saruman. Mm-hmm. How far back his treachery goes, who can guess, said Gandalf. He was not always evil. Once I do not doubt that he was the friend of Rohan, and even when his heart grew colder, he found you useful still. Mm. But for long now he has plotted your ruin, wearing the mask of friendship until he was ready. In those years, Wormtongue's task was easy, and all that you did was swiftly known in Isengard, for your land was open, and strangers came and went. And ever Wormtongue's whispering was in your ears, poisoning your thought, chilling your heart, weakening your limbs, while others watched and could do nothing, for your will was in his keeping. So I'm going to say something and then ask the question. I wrote in the previous page that there is a responsibility and compassion when there is unnecessary suffering. Mm-hmm. How much do you think truth factors into responsibility in this situation?
And by truth, do you mean the things that Gandalf is guessing here? His timeline, or...
Well, he has a lot of speculations. How far back his treachery goes, who can guess? Mm-hmm. In those years of Wormtongue's task was easy. This is a little bit of speculation, but we know that there are truths. And once I do not doubt that he was a friend of Rohan, mm-hmm. for now he has long plotted your ruin. He's giving facts. It's almost an opening statement for a trial. And it's all, in my estimation, a trial between the ideas that Theoden has about his almost imprisonment and the ideas mm. about what has happened and his role in it.
And so what would your answer be? Because with Havruta, you actually go first.
Well, I think that it's significant that earlier Gandalf says that, let me find the exact quote, in two ways a man may come with evil tidings. He may be a worker mm. of evil, or he may be such as leaves well alone and comes only to bring aid in time of need. And so I feel like Gandalf is aware that his responsibility is in bringing aid, and that the only thing he can do now is to sift truth from lies.
I like that. I think this is a compassionate thing to do. I've been asking and pondering how long have they known in Rohan of Saruman's treason? And so Gandalf, who is also still not sure of, say, it would start on this date, you know, but he is sure that it is longer and deeper. And perhaps even when he was a friend, he was starting to see you more as someone to use and not really as an ally. So I see that is a compassionate thing. And I think about that, yes, when I've been with someone who is vulnerable, and sometimes information can help them, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's just not worth it. And I'm actually debating that myself, because I'm going to have a phone call after you and I are done, where I have already decided I don't need to tell this person certain truths, and it will be more compassionate mm-hmm. in this instance not to, and it is also not my job to tell him those truths. So I've been pondering this for several days, but I could see another instance where that would not be the case. And there may be truths that I can tell this person when we have our phone call later today. There may be some truths that I can tell him out of compassion that will help him in some suffering that he's going through. So it's going to be a very interesting thing. I would never have paired these two things until you brought that up. And so my question back is, are there times when you don't tell? And do you think, in fact, that Gandalf is actually withholding some truth?
I think there is certainly a circumstance in which it is better advised or better reasons to not tell the entirety. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that Gandalf could tell more of Saruman's perfidy because he was his own prisoner at one point earlier in this entire set of, well, volumes. I'm trying to not call it a trilogy because it's one book with six parts.
Right. It was in the first of those that we find out he was his prisoner.
I think that, to digress slightly, I recently actually worked with a trauma integration specialist, and she spent a 55-minute session with me and had me recall a specific traumatic memory and then led me through a process by which I spoke certain truths about the situation that I have learned in the years since and applied it to that situation. And I think that kind of withholding of truth to let the person counsel themselves is what Gandalf is doing in restraining any information that he has about Saruman.
I like that. He's honoring Théoden.
Yes.
And they're also in a bit of a time crunch. They are going to be on the road so soon.
Oh, come on, they're not sleeping. They can talk as long as they want.
Right. Yeah. Poor fellas. I love what Gimli says. I don't know if it's still in this chapter, if it's the beginning of the next, but whew, men need so many words. I love that. And yeah, I think, I forget where it is. Right, because yes, hail Gimli, Glóin's son. I have not had time to learn gentle speech under your rod as you promised, but shall we not put aside our quarrel? And so Gimli is going to ride with Amor only if Legolas can be near him and Aragorn on the other side. So they ride together. I love that.
Yes.
So, yes. Oh my goodness, what a chapter. I love it too.
No kidding.
I love it too. No kidding.
And I think I love it more than when I began this discussion.
I certainly do. And
I'm a hopeless person.
I love it more. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Is this going to be a downfall for you now to move forward?
No, because my favorite battle of the entire thing is Helm's Deep. So
Helm's Deep. Okay, wonderful. And we will get to have Florilegia. It will be our next practice for the next three chapters. So we will have that, and that will be the treason of Isengard, Helm's Deep, through the theme of strength. We will move from vulnerability to strength, and they are not opposites. So there we are.
They're so companions.
Do you have any exhortations at the end of this chapter for characters in the chapter or anybody?
I want to exhort everyone who is passing through a time of darkness or a time of disquiet to breathe the clean air, to take a moment to experience the most simple of truths that they can find, and whether or not they are able to breathe is one of the simple truths. So that's where I have my exhortation.
I love that. There's the song, I can see clearly now, the rain is gone, I can see all the obstacles in my way. And I think when I was a child, I didn't understand that. I thought, oh, you don't, get the obstacles gone, make the obstacles go away. And so I see that exhortation there of go to the clear, clean air and you'll see your obstacles. And that gives you some strength to move forward. Mm-hmm. I would say I would like to exhort Eowyn a little bit. Hold on. You will find the right one. I promise. Mm-hmm. I promise. And appreciate your vulnerability, but hold on to your heart and maybe don't decide quite so quickly But bless you for it. But you will be well matched. There is someone who is worthy of you. So that's my.
We need to start a Tolkien dating service.
Oh, what do we call it? You're so good with names.
Oh, let's see.
Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh. Some play on Tinder. So moot. Meet moot.
Well met in the myth mood. No, that's it.
Right.
Yeah, this is too spontaneous.
Let's see. We'll work on that. Very good. So please, we love hearing from you in our community, our fellowship. I'm going to change all the word community.
You really need to do.
We do too. It's growing stronger every day. And if you'd like to join our Facebook fellowship, look for A Sacred Fellowship. On Twitter, we are a Sacred Fellows 1, and Instagram is A Sacred Fellowship, which is, again, the email asacredfellowship@gmail.com. And do you want to do your note from the Shire, or you want to tell us about Patreon next?
Well, I would like to invoke the Patreon just to thank our Patreon supporters. We value all of their contributions. Site and hosting renewal is coming up, as Bluehost was kind enough to remind me, in less than 60 days, and their help lessens the balance due, and of course makes us feel very supported. If you feel inspired to join their ranks, please look at our options on www.patreon.com/asacredfellowship. Perks have ranged from patron shoutouts to Tolkien-themed presents, and we appreciate every dollar.
I've even sent somebody a cookbook and something else. Somebody, oh yes, one of our fellowship had walked the Camino. So that person has now received a book about the Camino written by a friend of mine. So we're just brimming to give you stuff. So
yeah,
help us pay for the infrastructure so that we are free to shower you with gifts.
That sounds very odd, but yes, it makes sense. Now, for a note from the Shire, we do have a slightly long one, and I really want to appreciate Trish, who gave me permission to share this with her. Go ahead. To introduce us, Lorianne asked our listeners to tell a story about their own experiences with vulnerability and strength, and the responses were both moving and mind-blowing. We are truly surrounded by some of the most incredible people out there, and with Trisha's permission, I will read her response. I should give you a content warning that this discusses addiction, BPD, abuse, and rape. Mm-hmm. For years, I have heard my mom brush aside my brother's addictions, abusive behaviors, and refusal to get and follow treatment for his BPD. I'm presuming this is borderline personality disorder from other sources I've read. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to the note. 3 years ago, my brother was headfirst in another relationship that had just started, but with his addiction and impulsive personality, he jumped completely in. He moved his new girlfriend and her 3 children in with him to my parents' house. Both him and the girl had addictions to pills and were both using them at the time. They constantly were fighting and blowing up, making the holidays they were there for, October to January, unbearable. And it got to the point that I told my mom I wasn't comfortable with my kids being over there while they were still there. When the breakup happened and it was huge and over pills, my mom called me upset because she always takes on his problems as her failures. I was trying to explain that I had nothing to do with her, and she had just kept saying over and over how things aren't my brother's fault because he just had a bad, rough childhood and teen years and had unresolved issues with her and our father, and that they were the reason he is who he is. And this is the same thing I have heard my whole life. He needs more love. He needs more help. He needs more attention. He needs more patience. He needs more grace. But all came at the cost that I got less. We are 18 months apart, him the older. We both dealt with having an alcoholic and drug addict for a father. We both dealt with my mom battling depressive moods her whole life and postpartum depression for 2 years after our youngest sibling was born. We were preteens. We both dealt with our mother kicking us out constantly to our father or our other relatives. We both dealt with her screaming at us when she would be in depressive moods. We both dealt with our father introducing us both to drugs and alcohol when we were 10 and 11. Our teenage years specifically were both just awful. His were actually slightly better than mine, as he spent 12, no, sorry, he spent half the time, I apologize for that typo, she kicked him out with our grandparents who spoiled him, whereas I was sent to my aunt to work as an unpaid maid and nanny and often left alone with my three cousins for days with no food, and I would have to call my grandmother or load them into their wagon and walk to the store with them. I was sexually assaulted so many times, generally by the drug dealers or friends my brother would bring around me. Because, hey, pretty girls get you free stuff. I was raped by one of his drinking friends at 14. Yet I was the one who needed less, and not only needed less, but generally got punished more. I got called a slut by my mom so many times. I was expected to do better and be better than him, and held to standards that I could never possibly attain as a teenager dealing with my extreme ADHD, addiction, anxiety, and self-esteem issues that went either ignored or were told were my own failings. Yet I got pregnant at 16 and I knew I had to change. I didn't want this for my child. So with a lot of help from two teachers, the few friends I had left, their parents, my boyfriend, now husband of 15 years, and surprisingly my mom, I managed to change my behaviors and find professional help. My brother never has. But the day my mom called after the breakup, I just couldn't take it anymore. And I have always let her think she was right. He did need her more, and things weren't bad for me. That day, I said no. I told her to stop. I told her how much it constantly hurt me to hear her say these things. Why did he get this pass I never received? Ever. Why did she think he had did so much worse than me when I went through the same life experiences with our parents he did? Why did he get to be bailed out time and time again, yet every time I need to help, it is this big imposition? I just told her all of these things I had been holding in for years, never having the courage to stand up and say, this isn't fair, this isn't right, and you need to stop. And it was honestly the best thing to ever happen to our relationship. She admitted she had never thought about all of it, seemed to me, when it came to the double standards between my brother and I. That she was so sorry if I had felt I got less from her, and that she hadn't even realized it. It was probably one of the most stressful moments of my life, that I knew that I had to say something or that I would have to just walk away from things ever improving for us. Wow. Sorry, I just have no words after that.
Yeah. Thank you, Trish, for sharing that story. And thank you to everyone else who shared such amazing, beautiful stories of vulnerability and strength, and especially to men who have had to learn that it is okay. And we have some amazing, beautiful men in our fellowship who get it and know. And Trish, I'm glad you found that strength to say those things. And I'm glad that some things are better, but just remember you've got a full fellowship of people who are here for you. If you ever just need us, we're here.
Yeah, I think we have 17 fellowships now, given the, well, we have more than that, but we're not up to 18 yet.
Right. So I think that brings us to the end.
Oh, goodness. I don't think I've ever felt so strongly about this. A phrase, may Elbereth protect you. Be of good hope. And yes. Namarie.
Namarie.